I will supplement that by saying this movie is also somebody jumping in the pool and being like, this isn't a poo, this is just a Snickers, and then takes a big old bite of it.
And then saying, oh, that is a poo.
Did we just switch to watching Caddyshack?
Yeah. Plotters, you've joined us on this month's podcast. I'm your host, Naomi McQuaid.
I'm Jen McQuaid.
And I'm Lydia Malcolm, and this is Shocked and Applaud.
You know what movie we're reviewing because you clicked on the link.
You guys, Phantom of the Paradise. What is my life right now?
Is that a rhetorical question, or are you asking me to actually answer?
No, I that would be really depressing. Okay, quick anecdote. I went to go visit Sean, and he goes, so, Phantom of the Paradise. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, the movie Lydia picked out. I said, what? And then he goes, yeah, no, in the group text. So I pull up my phone, and I realized that I might have looked at it, but I didn't look at it. It was weeks ago that you texted that was the movie, right? And so I was like, I guess I didn't even watch the preview. So he pulls it up on his TV, and I make this face.
Can you describe that for our podcast listeners?
It's the face you make when, like, you see a pile of dishes falling over and there's no chance to save it. It's just the, like, the slow dawning horror.
I'm pretty sure that was the tagline for the movie.
And the preview doesn't do justice.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't.
For the film. So when I watched it this week, and I realized that as much as the trailer horrified me, the movie has left me shattered. So that's my introduction to the movie. I didn't know. Sorry, we generally start with an introduction of how we got to the movie, yeah. But I got introduced to the preview weeks after it was suggested. And now I'm changed. I'm forever changed.
Like a young Nazi watching the Ark open for the first time.
You're saying I got a melted face that looks like bacon?
Spoilers for the last scene.
Well, yeah. You didn't come here for not spoilers. Hey, how did you get to the film?
How did I get to the film?
Yeah. How did this film get presented to you, Jen?
I got a text.
Yeah. This was nowhere on my radar. Even after you sent the text, it was nowhere.
Like, I do not have the greatest knowledge of rock operas, especially circa 1970s, but this did not come anywhere near my radar at all.
So how is this in your pocket, Lydia?
Okay, so it all started. It started with the beginning of time. No. Okay, so I've loved Phantom of the Opera since a kid. It was the first musical I'd ever kind of come to. Mm. And the first time I ever heard about this movie was through a YouTuber, Lindsay Ellis. Mm. She was doing her series called Loose Cannon. She doesn't really do it anymore. But she has been a fan of Phantom of the Opera, specifically not just the movie. Not just the movie musical, which she's not really a huge fan of, but mostly the book, which I have never read.
From
Gaston Leroux.
God, when did that come out?
Oh, it was like the 1800s.
Oh, but they didn't make a movie about it till 1925.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was like one of those like movie monsters with Lon Chaney and everything. Mm-hmm. And she talks about this as its Phantom of the Opera adaptation, which it really isn't.
And, oh, no.
Yeah. And it just looked like the first time you step outside... I can only imagine it's the first time you're seeing New York at night, just all of these lights and a black sky, and it's just all like flashy and in your face, and 1 minute you're walking down Broadway and then you turn and the next minute you're probably on a street that you've never heard of and you're kind of lost.
That's how she describes the film?
Well, no, that's how I describe the film. But it was really intriguing. And because I never saw Little Shop of Horrors until I watched it for the podcast. And so that's kind of what I'm using the podcast for, watching movies that I've never seen before and possibly regretting it. I do want to say one other thing. There is another YouTuber that I follow called Nyx Fierce, and she does a review of this movie. And she specifically says there is never a day that goes by where she doesn't want to watch this movie.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll ever watch this movie again.
But I mean, those are really like my only real backgrounds on the movie itself. Hearing other people talk about it and being like, I should probably watch that.
Yeah.
Also, I got a podcast where we talk about weird stuff. So
that's cool. I like that. I like because I mean, it's all well and good to like pull from our own personal experiences and like, you know, Brave Little Toaster mm-hmm. was such a big deal for me, and Never Ending Story and yeah. Batman Returns and like, wait, was it Batman Returns?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I can't remember which Batman movie we watched. But like, it's good to pull from our own histories. I like that, especially the sharing part. But like, to have something that none of us were prepared for.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for Kool-Aid Man hyping me on that one. That is exactly right. So should we throw some Sean facts out there?
Sure.
You ready for some Sean facts?
Sean facts.
Sean facts.
I could be polished more. Okay. This movie came out in 1974.
Ooh.
Sean facts. It cost $1.8 million to make. Okay, ballpark, how much it grossed?
Ballpark, I'm going to go ahead and say a cool million.
$78,000.
$100 billion. Sorry.
I can't believe you're both wrong, but Jen comes closest. It was 70 grand. Oh. Yeah. That's bad.
Was this like the gem movie for back in their time? You know, the gem movie that they made that like was so like, they got that out of theaters in like the first month that it went out. It did so bad.
Wait, like Gem and the Holograms?
Gem and the Holograms, but they did a live action movie.
No.
You didn't hear about that?
I think I probably did because I loved Gem and the Holograms back in the day. I may have tried to cosplay the earrings and failed really bad.
The IRL movie just like tanked at the box office to such a degree that they were like, we're going to take this out of the theaters in the first month.
Oof.
Yeah.
And that's a oof coming from somebody who has owned a VHS copy of Pluto Nash. So
wow.
Bad. Okay. All right. More Sean facts.
Moving on.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about that one later. Oh, God. Okay. All right. Daft Punk cites this for artistic influence.
I would also like to note that Paul Williams, who is kind of the mastermind of this in a lot of ways, became sober. But before he became sober, he said he used to have a lot of hallucinations. Then he became sober, and then Daft Punk, two robots, came to him and told him they wanted to do an album with him. So not only did Daft Punk really like Paul Williams got to do an album with them later, too.
Paul Williams is like super big in the folk rock scene.
He wrote songs for the Carpenters. That's a Sean fact.
He wrote Rainbow Connection.
He wrote Rainbow Connection.
Yes.
Which, I mean, okay, we're going to get into it. Muppets. Oh, Muppet.
Muppets.
Okay. He looks like a Muppet.
He does.
He looks like Yoda a little bit.
Does a little bit.
Inspiration, maybe?
Would you put that past Oz?
No.
Yeah, exactly. Goodness sakes, guys. There's so many Sean facts. I don't know if we'll get them all in. Yeah, a lot of these will be peppered in throughout the actual thing. Some of it's movie facts. I guess as we come across the references, we'll put in what the influences are in mm-hmm. terms of, okay.
Yeah.
You guys, bum, 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 brrrr, bum, bum.
Is that copyright?
Not if you sing it and it's less than 30 seconds, right?
I don't know. I don't know enough about copyright. Interestingly enough, copyright becomes a very, not a huge deal in this, but.
Yeah, I mean, let's just blatantly rip off the 21st Century Fox people.
Yeah.
It's not like they have the time. I mean, they've got the money, but mm-hmm. they don't have the time to come after all of us. So right. You just pa-pa-pa-pa yourself however much you like.
This is technically a Disney movie now, isn't it?
That makes Garrett a princess. He's a Disney princess. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, I'm here for this. Okay.
Okay.
Rated PG.
I don't know how. Okay, we'll get there. But there are reasons this is not a PG movie. And it's not just blood and mm-hmm. disfigurement and like sex and drug use. Smoking tobacco products on screen, which is a thing we don't do anymore.
Assault.
Multiple. Attempted rape.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you guys.
Seriously.
Homophobia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, straight up racism.
Mm-hmm.
You guys.
This is a Disney movie.
Oh, God. Okay.
Opening monologue. It's all about this guy named Swan. He's super big in the music industry, and he's looking to create his own Xanadu.
Oh, my God. The line goes something like, Swan, he has no other name.
Pretentious.
The opening monologue is a guy named Rod Sterling.
Rod Sterling.
And that's the Twilight Zone guy. So if you're like, oh. You get chills when it starts, and it's like, in between. And you're like, oh, yeah, like, that's that guy.
Yeah. But this is not just a movie. This is also attempting to be a musical? Question mark?
Yeah. Yeah.
I noted all of the songs in it because I'm like, I think this might be trying to be a musical.
I have only seen this movie twice now. When you announce the song, I will attempt to sing it.
Okay. Okay. Which is perfect because we got an opening song.
Oh, really? I thought it was a monologue.
Well, yeah, it's the monologue, but... what else do you want to say?
Okay, so 21st Century Fox logo. Then the monologue starts, spoopy guy voice, and then like this spinning picture of this dead bird, because the record label that Swan starts is Death Records. It was a Swan song, but they, for copyright reasons, in real life, they had to switch it to Death Records. It's a spinning bird. Talking about this guy who's awful. And then it cuts. It just cuts to like some greasers.
It's the opening song called Goodbye, Eddie. Goodbye.
Oh, man.
It's pretty much about a guy who's like a music writer. And he's like, you know, trying to like make it big so that way he can get an operation for his sister. And there's only one way to really make it big in the industry, or when you're an artist anyways.
Yeah. What was the song Eddie Vedder covered like a million years ago?
Oh, where could my baby be? The Lord took her away from me. She's gone to heaven, so I got
it. The original is so much better than Eddie Vedder's version.
The original is very upbeat.
Yeah.
And they slowed it a lot down for Pearl Jam.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of either of the songs, personally.
You don't like teens dying in your pop music?
Well, I mean, the first one is very like upbeat and super poppy, and the one with Pearl Jam seems a little bit more...
That's bad, Eddie. Sorry.
the one that Pearl Jam does is just, it's more toned down. I feel like it goes more with like the idea behind the song. Yeah. But I don't like Eddie Vedder as a singer. I'm sure that's probably super controversial, but I'm not like a huge Pearl Jam fan.
No, I'm not. I have like alternative rock feels about me, but I don't listen to nearly enough to like have street cred about it. I just don't. I'm more Art Garfunkel, which brings us. Okay, wait. This is pretty good. They're dancing around singing about this guy who's going to kill himself to save his sister. They're hand jiving behind him. And I feel like the movie Grease has personally attacked my life so many times that I hate the hand jive now. When somebody has the duck flip hairdo, I want to punch him in the face. Like, no, don't do it. She was about to hand jive at me, you guys. I was about to throw my book.
Okay, I won't do it. I was just going to slap my knees, but I don't want to attempt to. I don't want to be randomly assaulted like a couple of people in the beginning number.
That does happen. But like, but then if I assault you and you die, then our podcast gets super popular.
Apparently.
But I can't make more without you, so.
I think you would be fine.
No, I would not. I need someone to ground me, and Jen's not good material for that. You egg me on.
When was Grease released?
Oh no, if this movie influenced Grease, I'm gonna run. You're making me look up Grease on my phone. Oh my God. 1978.
This is an ongoing thing. We keep looking at different movies thinking, all right, this movie totally stole from this other movie.
Yeah, this movie reeks of Tommy. Who's Tommy, right? And so we go to look it up. Tommy came out in 75, and this came out in 74, guys.
There are songs that sound kind of, I mean, you'd think, all right, Phantom of the Paradise, when is this in relation to Andrew Lloyd Webber's Broadway, Phantom of the Opera?
Yeah.
And it predates it by 12 years.
12 mm-hmm. years. It reeks of Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Mm-hmm. There is a moment where it looks like Halloween, kind of like it was the inspiration to it. There's like, yeah, we'll talk about it when we get to it.
It's just crazy. So now we've got greasers predating greasers. And then they're...
Well, I think that the idea of the greaser was kind of around... Like, they mention that Swan was, like, the one who brought the nostalgia back to the 70s. They say that in the opening monologue. lot.
Well, yeah, because the aesthetic is from the 50s. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure. 50s, 60s. So it makes sense. Fashion turns like every 20 years or so.
Right. Well, there was like that whole big nostalgia craze for the 80s, like in the 20s, in the 2000s.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And we're getting, or no, technically that was 2010s. And we're getting into 2020s, which means we're getting into a 1990s nostalgia. And here's the thing.
I am wearing leggings right now.
I'm getting myself a million slap bracelets.
I'm going back to the skating rink with my glow sticks, y'all.
Anyways, back to the song. You had said that you were going to try and like sing these songs.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. So it's called
Goodbye, Eddie. Goodbye. I want to see this.
Okay. So this one's because I've got the Eddie Vedder song stuck in my head. Like now it's like turned into that.
Yes.
So it's just like
bad Eddie Vedder trying to remember this song.
No, it's got kind of a Four Seasons. Isn't that the kind of the Four Seasons feel to it?
It's got this doo-wop-ness.
Yeah.
So it's just like.
Yeah.
Goodbye, Eddie.
Goodbye, Eddie. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Eddie. Goodbye. Nope, that doesn't sound like it at all. But it's like doo-wop, yeah. Goodbye, Eddie. Goodbye. I mean, and there's a guy. They're all really happy, and it's very dark. It's not good. Like they got all these, you know, like people dancing and smoking drugs and running around the stage. At some point, dude pulls out a knife. And he, like, fake stabs himself and then, like, throws himself on the ground. And it's stupid. When a young singer dies, his album goes straight to the top of the chart. He sounds like Jack Black from...
Nacho Libre?
Nacho Libre.
Oh, I was getting, like, French vibes, but yeah.
He sounds like this.
Oh, yeah.
Or the comic dog. Triumph. Triumph the comic dog.
Yes. Oh, I can't believe. I love that dog. Man, remember when Triumph was a thing? I miss that dog. He had a whole political special at the election night. And that's the last I ever saw of him because Trump became elected and he just couldn't go on, I don't think. This is not a political podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, so hand jiving. I wrote in my notes, is this on Spotify? I have, upon completing watching the film, have not looked it up on Spotify.
It might be on Spotify.
Goodbye, Eddie. Goodbye. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So during this number, we do see a random man like putting up a sign that specifically says Winslow Leach at the piano. And it's like right over the band that's performing is called the Juicy Fruits. Should probably give that information out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the, yeah. Okay. I just read my notes and it goes, this song is everything you need to know about the American healthcare system. Kills himself to save his sister.
Because nothing set in place.
Okay.
That's dark.
Yeah. Okay, so then the music stops and nobody makes any noise. They've got all these people who look like they're enjoying watching this band, even though they assault people in the audience, but they seem like plants, like they just kind of did the thing. And then they all turn and they look at this giant mirror over a listening booth at the top of the studio. And you see these impeccably white gloves just start the slowest, most muted clap. And then everybody loses it.
Yeah, right? they join in. They start clapping. They're waiting for this man to go ahead and give approval of the band that after they've just finished playing.
Yes. And then Philbin.
Philbin.
Philbin. He's named after Mary Philbin, who was in the original 1925 Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I forget his first name, something. But we'll just call him Philbin anyway. He directs to camera. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you that... I don't like that. It makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't want you to talk to me directly. We've talked about this in the past. If you want to go back to our very first episode, and God bless you if you do, go listen to Tusk. Our review of Tusk, guys. There's a direct-to-camera that they do, and that was one of my very first improv rants about direct-to-camera driving me crazy. But now, Philbin's about to exposition all over our faces.
He's complaining to this guy with the white gloves about a woman who he like totally got her started and he gave her drugs when she was on the road. And now that she has thoughts and dreams and personal aspirations that don't align with his specific goals, he's like, we tried to sue her. We bribed the judge. And they said that you couldn't hold someone on a lifelong contract.
He actually, he was complaining about her altruism that came after fame, right?
Right.
He uses the phrase, I'm going to say this. And you know what, Jen? If it's offensive enough, feel free to edit this, because I don't really care to say it out loud, except for that it screams in the face of all these other things we're going to cover later on. But he goes, she gives more of a crap about those starving gook orphans.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, my God. We're in the first 3 minutes of this film, and it's like the second most third. Oh, no. There's the drug using greasers. I mean, I don't begrudge you your substances, but they're talking about, presumably, a young person's suicide. They fake an assault and a rape on stage.
Yep.
And then they say that phrase.
Yeah. And like, even in his complaining, even if he didn't say that, he still would be a pretty bad guy, because he talks about how he put all of this money into her. He paid off a columnist to write this beautiful piece about her. He, kept her going on tour with all these drugs. And, as soon as she becomes super famous.
Yeah. And then he tries to get her in a lifelong contract. But a judge who he also bribed, mm-hmm, wouldn't uphold it, because you can't be unioned for life with a job.
Right. And during this entire conversation, we kind of get the idea that who he's talking to is this Swan character that, mm-hmm, they talked about at the very beginning.
Yeah, who doesn't show his face in public anymore. And he has a very good reason for that. But it's kind of like this Sia gimmick, that artist with a wig, right? Sia?
Oh, yeah.
She doesn't show her face very much or at all, or just parts of it. But he's this enigmatic figure.
Right. And Swan's like, so what do you want me to do about it? Do you want me to break her? And he's like, isn't that enough? And Swan's like, well, she's not really going to last. She's big now, but she's going out the door. Her 15 minutes are almost up, is basically what he's saying.
Yeah. But now while this monologue is happening, and it's like, if I was in debate club, this would be a monologue I would pick out if I was a high schooler who was looking for something kitschy.
Yeah.
It's not great. It's okay. For who he is and what they're trying to exposit about how they're exploitative of the acts that they work with. But our friend is now setting up a piano on the stage below that's just been cleared.
The guy who was putting up the sign earlier saying Winslow Leach at the piano, he's setting up a piano. So maybe this is Winslow Leach. You can kind of infer that.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that. Would you like to know what musical inspiration I have dubbed this scene?
Go ahead.
I call it Elton Garfunkel Muppet Jack Skellington. Fight me.
I'm not going to.
Yeah, Elton Garfunkel Muppet Jack Skellington. That is what this scene is.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's playing the piano, throwing his head around with his big Muppety hair, singing like Art Garfunkel mixed with a unglammed Elton John.
Yeah, he's definitely not glam at this point.
Yeah, not at all. And then he's a wiry guy with like eyes that are very big in his head. And
kind of a Gene Wilder shape to his face.
Well, in that he's got these kind of sunken eyes, but they're big. And then he's got like a strong jawline, strong cheekbones, a big forehead, but this mop of like 70s.
Curly hair.
Some of the lyrics kind of bleed through the monologue and the conversation that's going on between Philbin and Swan. And like, I just want to read off some of these lyrics.
And then I'm going to sing them.
Okay. All my dreams are lost and I can't sleep. And sleep alone could ease my mind.
And sleep alone could ease my mind.
All my tears have dried and I can't weep. Old emotions may have rest in peace and dream a bunch of friends.
And dream a bunch of friends.
Like, I mean,
they hurt. The lyrics are bad.
Yeah.
There's not a song in this that I'm like, huh, that's great. None of them. And I listened to them all.
You listened to them all twice.
I did. And I still don't know if it's on Spotify. Okay, so Swan stops and he's like, this will be the music that I open my paradise to.
Right. And he's like, this is the next sound. And the guy's like, you mean this singer over here?
No, not him, but his music.
Oh, what do you want me to do with the singer? Get rid of him?
Yeah, I guess so.
Essentially, that's what happens with the rest of the scene.
Yeah, so he finishes the song and now we cut to backstage where he's apparently continuing to work on his
cantata.
I looked it up. I looked up the word. I did, I will tell you. The word is Italian, literally sung, past participle, feminine singular of the Italian verb cantare, to sing, is a vocal composition with instrumental accompaniment, typically in several movements, often involving a choir. But he says, when he's talking to Philbin, that only one person is going to sing it. Mm-hmm. But the definition says that there's going to be a choir.
He specifically says that nobody's going to sing my music except for me. That becomes an important point.
And he immediately throws it out the window.
Yeah. But it's it's also like he gets really like Philbin talks about the band, which the band at this point is called Juicy Fruits. Philbin's like, oh, yeah, we're going to make sure that the Juicy Fruits sing your music. And he's just like goes into rage mode.
He asks him for a tape. He's like, I don't have a tape. I've got it all written down here. And he holds up this stack of paper that's 200 to 300 sheets long.
It's like a half a ream.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so he gets in his face and he goes, I'm the only one who can sing Faust.
Yeah, he's writing this pop rock opera.
It's awful.
So Winslow is essentially writing this piece of music that's based off of Faust, which if anyone is familiar with Faust, it's literally a play about making a deal with the devil and how it goes bad, which is interesting because like Phantom of the Opera kind of has twinges to Faust. And there's a third novel that, you know, is kind of an inspiration to this movie. We'll talk about it at the end. But it's also kind of a Faustian tale where it deals with devils.
Yeah.
Which is also interesting because it's essentially like Winslow calms down. He's like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's just sometimes I snap like that and I don't know why. And I was like, okay.
Rage issues?
Red flag, maybe?
Maybe.
And then Philbin's like, oh, don't worry about it. We're going to take this and we're going to go ahead and give it to Swan and probably be producing your next album.
Yes. And he wraps his fingers on the ream of paper and he's got these perfectly manicured fingernails. And it makes me so mad because he's such a grubby guy.
Yeah.
Okay. So
1 month later.
Okay. So
Winslow decides to follow up with Swan and he goes to Death Records. I call it Swan HQ.
I call it Willy Wonka. Death Row Records. Nope. Don't sue us. Death Records, Willy Wonka. Because the perspectives are so forced. Everything looks like really bizarre. He enters this giant building, but then there are all these very short doorways and he has to walk through these little weird corridors. And then like the color scheme is non sequitur. It's got like a black room and then a white room and then a red room or a hallway. And it's just bizarre. And he walks up to the secretary. There's a better word for that. The PA?
Assistant?
I want to say personal assistant, but she's like the front desk lady. And she's sitting there under, so you know how we mentioned that Death Records was when they originally shot the film, was going to be Swan Song Records. But there was already a Swan Song who produced a Beatles song. She Loves You, I think, is the song. And they had to go through the entire film. And if you pay close enough attention, you'll see them superimposing the Death Records over the Swan Song Records. But there's still images of swans everywhere and bird themes throughout. So like, she's wearing, I'm pretty sure she's wearing a Death Records shirt, but behind her is a fake, it's the dead bird from the opening shot where it's like just a dead bird.
Yeah.
So Swan Song was Led Zeppelin, and then Swan itself, I believe, was the She Loves You release. It's got to be somewhere in Sean's.
No, I'm sure it's a Sean fact too. But it's really interesting to see them. Like, it's actually done pretty well. I've seen worse edits on YouTube now.
For 1974, yeah.
It was their version of CGI. They do a whole bunch of superimposed and cutting out of the frame and that kind of thing.
Yeah. He's like, I'd like to speak to Swan.
Yeah. And so she's like, what's your name? And he gives her Winslow Leach. And so she looks down at her whole list.
She has a little Rolodex of index cards that she like flips down.
Yeah. And one of the names that you saw was Bette Midler. And that's always the name that sticks out to me. I don't know who anybody else is.
Peter Fonda was on that list.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Peter Fonda, who is problematic to work with, apparently.
Yeah, anecdotes from service workers.
Yeah. But she flips, she sees Winslow's name, she flips it up, and in this beautiful, like, typeset handwritten note, it goes,
it's a specific kind of font that is throughout the entire movie.
Oh, that 70s weird bleedy font thing. It looks almost gothic, but you can tell it's hand-drawn, so it's pretty cool looking. I like that. If you're thinking of, like, a Grateful Dead poster, it's kind of that handwriting.
Yeah.
And it says, never to be seen.
And so she calls the guards.
And they kick him out of the building.
Right. There's a little bit of a moment with the doors where he's getting chased out by the guards.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Winslow is not going to take no for an answer.
Yeah, he totally, I think we see, is it Swan getting into a car?
Yeah.
And then he jumps in a cab and is like, follow that car, which is a phrase we all want to say at some point in our life.
Mm-hmm.
And then they follow him all the way back to Swan's mansion. He jumps the fence And this is my he just walks the fuck in moment. Like, yeah. Who jumps the fence?
Yeah.
Like, they've ghosted you for a month. Yeah. Be pissed. But
this is why you copyright your artistic work before you give it out to anyone else who's saying, yeah, I totally want to produce that. Be like, okay, I will get back to you just as soon as I've gotten the copyright on this thing, because that's going to scare them away quick. But if someone is asking you for your work and they are not willing to pay you for your work, you are allowed to turn around and tell them no.
Yeah.
So.
But that didn't even work in production for this movie. Like, they...
It's true. They got sued, guys, for, like, derivative work.
So what you're saying is Paul Williams is the Winslow Leach?
Yeah. He was literally going to be Winslow. Wait, what guy? Peter? Yeah, yeah.
Paul Williams.
Paul Williams was going to be...
Peter Fonda.
They all switched around. Like Swan was going to be Leach, and then Paul was going to be... Winslow, and it was weird. Like, the guy was like, the actor who played Winslow, he was like, it was like musical chairs until like we were doing it. It's amazing.
Yeah. So Winslow just walks right into this mansion, sees all these ladies,
they're,
you know,
gorgeous. Okay, fun. Sean fact, Sissy Spacek worked on this film, and the director would later on have her be in Carrie, but she didn't make it onto camera. She did make it onto audio in a future scene, but she was in charge of costumes, and they wasted an entire day of production because she screwed it up so bad. But I mention it now because the costumes come out right now. Like, I could give a rip about greasers. I could give a rip about a guy with fancy gloves and everything. But the women dressed to audition for Swan, air quote audition, they're gorgeous. They have stunning outfits, and they are all like 70s thin and like high-waisted pants, which are totally back, and they have like robes and layers and contrast, and they're all, every single one of them, stared at it hard, gorgeous. And none of them can sing.
One of them can sing, and her outfit is actually probably the weirdest.
Yeah. They're all sounding like friggin'
karaoke singers.
They do. They sound like the seagull from Little Mermaid. They're like, la, 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 la. And she's like, ah, over in the side, just nailing it. And he's like walking up these stairs, these big marble stairs past all these women. It's a very beautiful shot when you're getting to see all these ladies and you're hearing that they can't sing. And he's like, his ears perk. He like looks to the side and he like hound dogs it a little bit. And he's like, oh, and he zeroes in on her.
And when the camera gets next to the person who's singing, we then see like it pan out a little bit. And then Winslow gets like right up next to her. And
like, I'm like, in her space.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure I've mentioned it before. North Americans, we have an average distance. It should be twice this now. But average wise, we have 3 feet between us in casual conversation. Dude, 6 feet now. But like, he is within 12 inches of her face, and closer than that for the duration of this scene.
Right. This is Phoenix, played by Jessica Harper.
Mm-hmm.
And she is singing everybody. So the song that we heard Winslow play at the piano, they're covering it a little bit.
Hmm.
I think it's the song that they're doing. It's one of his songs, and she's singing it, and he's really like, yeah, this is really good. No, continue. But everyone else is kind of butchering it. And he's these different like versions of it.
Okay, there are so many things wrong with this scene. He gets in her space, like really close. I don't like that. I would have pushed you away, physically pushed you away. And I'm not a physical person, right? I would have been like, uh-uh. And then he's like, sing that again. Within 12 inches of her face, sing that again. And she was like, what are you talking about? He's like, sing it. She's like, okay. And I'm like, no. Rando guy, I'm not going to do it for you. I don't know you.
I love your reactions to this movie.
I'm
so
mad about that.
And he starts singing along with her. He's like, sing. And then he starts singing along with her.
Like, how do you know that? Except everybody in the room has a copy of it.
Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, I wrote that. And then there's this lady behind you. It's like, if you wrote this music, then you'd be in there with the auditions.
He's like, I don't know why she didn't contact me.
It's because he stole your work, dumb.
Yeah, he... Mm-hmm. Okay, so they keep alluding to him being like, and you'll see it later on, but they allude to his genius. But then he does these super inexplicably dumb things.
I'd also like to point out the fact that he was like, no one will sing my music except for me. And then a pretty lady who sings pretty well. And then he's like, oh, yeah, she can totally do that. I'm like, okay, Winslow.
Okay, Also, did you notice in this scene, and I don't know if you noticed, but I noticed these kinds of things, neither of them blink on camera the entire scene.
So you're saying they're robots?
I'm saying that they both have as big a eyes as possible. His mouth does not close on like Bella Swan levels of agape. It's awful. And I'm like, and you're supposed to feel like this primal connection between them, and I don't feel it at all. It's just a really intense, you sing my song beautifully. You're the only one who could sing my song. I really need your help, mister. I can't. And I'm like, no.
I didn't realize this movie was going to make you so angry.
I am literally sweaty right now.
Do you need a fan?
I'm my own fan. Okay. So then they hug, by the way. She's so won over by him. She throws her arms around him because he's going to help her become a star.
She just wants to sing this music. It doesn't matter where she sings it. She just wants to sing this music.
She doesn't need the lead. She can be in the chorus.
And so they start bringing in the ladies into the audition.
They start marching up the stairs, and he tries to like tag. They're counting them off. He's like, one, two, three. This greaser guy's at the top of the stairs in a Death Records jacket, which are awesome, by the way. I want a Jean's Death Record jacket real bad. And then like she gets up there, and he's like, what? Did you notice the girl in front of her hasn't even gone in yet? He stops counting at her, and it's just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then the entire line stops.
Yeah.
They're not even at the top of the stairs. And he's like, what is this, a boyfriend?
And he's just like, no, I was the one who wrote all of this music. I'm trying to get in touch with Mr. Swan. And I was like, well, if you want to go ahead and get in touch with Mr. Swan, make an appointment at the office. I'm like, oh, they don't want to see me at the office.
Well, he doesn't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
Winslow steps to him a little bit. Guy pushes him. He's like, pushes him down the stairs. He goes down a few steps. And then she's like, I'll tell him all about you. And she runs into the room.
And there's like, so they get into the room. Door's really short.
Yes. You know why?
No.
Because Swan is short and every door that belongs to him is lowered.
Oh, ego.
Yeah.
That makes sense. But so we see like...
There's a group of men in there and she goes in alone.
Well, no, there's like a series. There's a lot of... all of the girls in front of her go in there as well. And he's... And what I saw in the movie is they grab one girl.
They grab her.
Well, they have like one girl like get up, and then Philbin was like in front of her, and then they grab Phoenix and throw her down. Philbin gets on top of her as the doors are closing, and you hear her scream.
Yeah, okay, and then freaking Winslow, he steps up to the door, and whereas every other opportunity in this film, he'll just go wherever the hell he wants.
Doesn't go in there.
No, he just puts his ear to the door like some perv.
And then the door's wide open, and Phoenix comes rushing out.
Yeah, her pantsuit is unzipped in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no, not like this.
I just wanted to sing, but I don't want to get it like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Winslow's not like registering at all what happened, or maybe he just doesn't care.
It's hit or miss. He either does or doesn't care. And I'm like, did they just throw? And I didn't catch the first one the first time with the greaser thing, with the faked rape thing. But this is supposed to be real rape. And I'm like, rape?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is already clear. But I don't know where the satire, and this makes me feel like Winslow. I don't know where the satire starts and ends with this film.
Yeah.
And I've got a pretty good read on like comedy. Not that I'm funny, but like I've watched a lot of comedy. I get where beats land and I get where I imbibe it.
Right. If the creators of this film wanted to go ahead and put, like, if they wanted to say commentary about entertainment industries and how they only really employ, you know, attractive women for their own sexual desires, it's pretty much just making that statement without saying anything of purpose else outside of, like, imagine a group of people standing around a pool, and you got that, and everybody is, and there's a piece of turd in the pool. This movie,
I like where this is going.
This movie is just someone who points and says, "There's a piece of turd in the pool." They're not doing anything to pick it out.
I will supplement that by saying this movie is also somebody jumping in the pool and being like, "This isn't a poo. This is just a Snickers," and then takes a big old bite of it,
and then saying, "Oh, that is a poo."
did we just switch to watching Caddyshack?
Yeah.
I've never seen Caddyshack.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay. All right. You're in trouble now.
99% of the women are okay with this scene. And it is just one woman that doesn't, she doesn't feel like it's her thing.
They go again and again. They go back to her and she's just like, they'll make the joke over and over. I'm sorry for air quotes and I'm sorry you can't hear them, guys, but like, they make the jokes. That should be a thing. they make the joke that he's holding auditions, but nobody ever sings. And then they do this rape joke, and then they beat you over the head with it three more times, where it's like, I've been here 12 times, and I've never sang.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. And even in the first assault at the very beginning, like, it's hard to gauge if that's, like, staged, because the other people who are sitting at the table, they don't pick up and leave. Like, if my friend just got assaulted in front of me, mm-hmm. I am going to be leaving with my friend to make sure that they are okay. That's just common courtesy with anyone that you're with.
Yeah. If somebody left a dinner because they had a bad appetizer, I'd go with them. If somebody gets their bra ripped off of them and then paraded around the stage, I'm going to be like, you know what? We can out. We can out right now.
Yeah, maybe punch the guy who took the bra and, you know.
Yeah, but that was like an in-house show. So I feel like that was probably staged. But this is definitely implied rape.
Yeah.
And then, or like imminent rape. And then Winslow, as she runs out the door sobbing, he's all like, did you tell them about me?
If you're trying to make a statement, I don't know exactly what that statement is, Brian De Palma.
Okay. So let's go from terrible to also very bad, because now
Winslow gets like grabbed by the bouncers outside of the door.
God, and I forgot about the cops.
And then he asks, oh, do you know where a good department store is? And they're like, sure. And then
No, wait. You glossed over the orgy scene.
No. This is right before that.
Oh, no. Really?
Because he mentions like going to a department store, because
that's where he gets the outfit to wear the orgy.
I watched this three times.
I was like, why does he say that?
The next scene is like this like gaggle of women on a bed. And this is where like one of them mentions, I've been here 12 times and I've never sung.
Yeah. And they start to rub up on each other. They have a really great color scheme going, by mm-hmm. the way. It's like red, orange, and like salmon.
Yeah.
It's visually, it's very popping. And they're on a circular bed covered in like a silk sheet. And they're like, he likes to watch us. And then you get, I mean, more so than in previous scenes, you see that there are cameras everywhere. And there are naive girls there and girls who've been there a bunch of times. But like,
yeah. It's like they're trying to play up the fact that all of these women are essentially trying to, you know, break out into a singing career. And
they start rubbing up on each other, getting their porn, like, and they're voiced by Sissy Spacek, who, again, didn't make it into the film, but she did the voices for some of these girls.
Oh, Sissy Spacek, you're so much better than this.
She really is. And so they're rolling around and the door opens. They're all like, Oh, Swan.
I do like his entrance. If I had my way, I would probably, like, every time a door opened, there'd be a fog machine behind me and a light.
Glass wall.
Yeah.
Red smoke.
Yeah.
Outstep Swan.
Yeah. Played by Paul Williams.
Yeah.
And
and then it cuts back down to the scene with the girls. And
you see Winslow saying, hey, Mr. Swan.
Yeah. So guys, my notes are like, is this progressive or the worst? And that's accurate. But also, he's not in any of the scenes with the girls before. Like, I turned that stuff up. Like, once I realized that he was in there and I watched a second time, I looked for him specifically. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not there.
Right.
So Swan walks in, poof, Winslow. And he's like, and then, because I'm going to say all the problematic things because I'm the maddest about it, Winslow is like, get that fag out of here.
It's Swan says that.
Swan says, get that fag out of here.
Ugh.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Oh,
I mean,
I hate that.
If that first scene with Philbin didn't clue you in on what kind of a movie this was going to be.
Yeah.
But still, it's like, I don't need this. I don't need this. I do not need this.
Would you have been okay if he had said like something like fruit or
freak
or like one of those other coded words that you mentioned before? I learned the word coded today. coded, like it was... Dandy. Dandy's one of my favorite words for
See, if he had said dandy, it would have been a lot less egregious. But I think that's partly like, I mean, imagine if we lived in a universe where dandy was considered a slur or like it's more like the same level of slur as fag is.
Yeah.
I don't even like saying it. I
right.
Like
there are words
it.
You just don't want to say anymore. Yeah. And that's OK. You know what? Mm-hmm. You're in charge of your mouth. You get to choose what you say. They chose to say this.
Yeah, they did. Of course, it's like close to 50 years old, but still, it's like, it doesn't take a lot to go ahead and be open and respectful, open-minded and respectful towards people who are different. It doesn't take any effort.
Well, and there we're talking, this is what, post-Stonewall riots? Like, this is post a number of movements that brought gay, lesbian, transgender, LGBTQ plus people to light. This is not like an era that had no potential for enlightenment. This is them making a choice to make a gay joke because a guy had to dress like a woman to get into this sexist situation where women are being forced to have sex. Like, there's so much going wrong with this.
Which, I mean, maybe they're trying to say that this is all very, maybe this they're trying to speak to the absurdity about this, but it's, I mean, how would Winslow actually get in there?
I'm okay with somebody cross-dressing to infiltrate an organization. I've not had a problem with that for all of the DuckTales I watched as a kid. Like, that's right. Fun. Bugs Bunny was always a really, really sexy rabbit. Yeah, but like...
Shakespeare did that too. Not just within the performers doing what they were doing, but within the writing too. There was women being men and men being women.
I mean, I first like fell really hard for you when you were Sebastian and you're giving this monologue. And I was like, and here's how life mated we are. I was off stage. I got to play the fool, which is great because my life is playing a man on stage. But like, I was standing off stage dressed in this weird fool outfit because I was the comedic relief. And Jen was on stage delivering Sebastian's big speech. And you said the phrase, you're exclaiming that you get to finally see Viola. And like, when you're like, how is this possible? You died at sea or whatever. And then you say the phrase, nor is there any deity in my nature. And that's the only part of the sentence I remember because I was off stage being like, that was 99. I remember like being like, and that's when I started like thirsting really hard for you.
No. Well, if you want to talk about people that don't have deity in their nature, Swan is definitely this guy.
He technically does have deity in his nature.
I love how you brought that back around, Jen. That's really good.
Sorry, guys. Sorry.
I would like it pointed out that at least in this case, when he's using that horrible language, that at least it's the one that's sold his soul to the devil.
Yeah, yeah. The evil ones are acting evil. But then, like, there are no redeemable people in this movie.
Not really.
Not a one.
So the police show up. We see Winslow just, like, beaten, and the police show up.
This is the best beaten-up makeup I've seen in a film, modern or otherwise, ever. It looks like he has been beaten in the face, and he's laying face down in the garden outside the... I almost said palace, but I mean mansion, which they call the...
They call it the Swanage.
It's the worst! I mean, it's. I know I sounded more vehement. I'm more vehement about the social issues of like saying the things that I find hateful and venomous. But can I also, and on a different level, hate Swanage?
Yes. I was thinking there would be some like special meaning behind it, but no.
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 So you know how sometimes we talk about race in our podcast because we care enough to at least acknowledge the people of color, especially when we do older films where that representation isn't very much.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we've talked about it so many times, it's something that I think about almost every time we watch a movie. And so I'm like, oh, some brown people showed up.
But they're police officers.
Which I'm fine with. I've met African-American police officers before. That's not a problem. That's a total thing that happens.
Yep.
But then they're not there to serve and or protect.
Like Winslow at one point says, you got to help me. Swan stole my music.
And like, I don't know nothing about that. But
they specifically plant drugs.
They're like, look at his purse.
Yeah.
He was thoughtful enough to have a purse. And the officer squats down, opens up. And he's like, oh, the other officer.
Very blatantly like hands drugs to the other one.
It's a condom of what, crack?
Smack. He calls it smack, Jack.
Yeah, that's heroin. He's like, right where Swan said it would be.
Mm-hmm. And then Winslow goes to Sing Sing, which, if I'm being...
He gets convicted for life.
Oh, that's right.
Life in prison over... Okay. I will say this is better than real life. He does get life in prison for a personally consumable amount of weed. It doesn't look intent to distribute. That looks like a personal condom of
I've heard like in the war against drugs, there are people who are put in prison for life over like an ounce of marijuana.
Right.
And but
this is a white guy in the 1970s going away.
Right. But he's going away for life. And personally, I think that it was the filmmaker's attempt to put him in Sing Sing.
Yeah.
Just for that joke.
Well, they it also is a plot device because. What does he say to the judge?
I was like, oh, the judge, they say, do you know how much this can get you in prison? And then it cuts to the judge and he says, for life, bangs the gavel. And then Winslow turns around and says, but I'm innocent. Swan stole my music and framed me.
And he's like, almost full. He's like three quarters to camera, like holding his hands up, like, why?
It kind of looks like a shot out of a comic book.
Yeah.
You know how comics get that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a dramatic shot. And then it cuts to a view of the ocean, the island of Sing Sing with a prison on it. And come on, Sing Sing, popra.
Yeah. It just seems a little bit like we're going to make sure he goes to prison so we can get this joke. It does lead us to Winslow getting put into a dental program.
Yeah, they do experimental dentistry at Sing Sing in this film, and they're like, you're all volunteers.
I want to point out that this is a program that is sponsored by a foundation, the Swan Foundation, I think is what they say.
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, we're going to remove all of your teeth, which are a source of infection, and we're going to replace them with all these steel teeth. And they hold up little dentures, and Winslow's like, I didn't volunteer. And he's like, I'm innocent. And he's like, oh, you are? You're innocent? Who else is innocent? Raise of hands. Raise your hand.
And they pan over to like other people and they all raise their hand saying they're innocent, which I'm not a huge fan of that joke. I mean, mostly because like, you know, with the way that prison systems are.
Oh, you mean the innocent conviction rate of like 40%? Yeah, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bad joke.
Yeah.
They use it in Shawshank.
They do. But Morgan Freeman has the ability to deliver a line that is unfavorable in a way that makes you want to ask for seconds. And this was just like, oh, no.
I think that's a joke that I think I've heard in several pieces of cinema or, you know.
It's old.
Yeah.
It's a bad old joke. Everybody's innocent. Well, it points to the face that we tout innocent until proven guilty, but all of us are guilty of guilty until proven innocent. Ugh, that got sad. Okay, I'm done being sad.
Months later.
So in the prison, they assemble boxes of tiddlywinks. And if you don't know what that is, if in the 70s, there was a really popular game where you took these little clear plastic discs and you kind of do this coin flip trick where you press the edge onto the other another coin and you flip it. Almost not. It's not like Pogs, though. It's hard to describe. You have these little clear plastic discs and you press one edge into the edge and it flips it. And you aim for this container, which is kind of like a dartboard setup. It's got like little dishes that it lands in for points. And it's tiddlywinks is often, you've heard the phrase, it means no big deal or unimportant. So like they're doing this very unimportant job in prison and they're miserable looking, but the radio's playing, the camera's panning.
And you see Winslow in this white getup with a hat that says Swan Foundation.
His beautiful locks have been shorn from his head.
He has his mouth slightly agape so you can see the metal teeth.
He is pale.
Yeah.
He is seething.
Naomi, what is being exposited through the radio?
It's a song. It's the Juicy Fruits presenting the new Faust musical by genius Swan. And which song is it?
It's not actually a song. It's just an announcement saying that Swan's going to be opening up his club called The Paradise and that he's going to be performing this new musical number called Faust. And this is going to be performed by his band, The Juicy Fruits. And as soon as Winslow hears about The Juicy Fruits.
What does he say? Does he like, never, or something like that, right?
It's dramatic no of some kind.
Oh,
he goes after the police officer.
He jumps on a prison guard.
Mm-hmm.
And like throws his ass. Like on the tiddlywinks, the guy's foot lands in all the green tiddlywinks and they go flying. It's beautiful. I was like, ooh, that's a little flair on that. And then Winslow stands up on the conveyor belt and starts running down the conveyor belt, screaming. And then there's an outtake tube. He jumps into a box of tiddlywink boxes, slides down the ramp into a truck that then drives. Is this too much? I'm sorry. They drive away. The box falls out of the truck, and now he's escaped prison through his rage.
You've finished part one of our review of 1974's Phantom of the Paradise, a plotter. But there are still two lengthy spoiler-infused episodes left in our in-depth review of this surreal Brian De Palma rock musical horror comedy. Hey, this is your audio engineer and magical masked musician, Jen. Looking for more fantastic film reviews? Stream Queens has recently reviewed Iron Man 3, and Nostaljunk Podcast has just reviewed 1985's Fright Night. You can find Stream Queens and Nostaljunk Podcast along with us by searching in your favorite podcasting app or by checking out who we follow on our Twitter account using @ShockedApplaud. We're celebrating over 2,000 all-time downloads this month and would like to especially thank those of you who return each week to deep dive into cinema's most quirky and haunting blasts from the past. Want to boost our signal even further? Become an official applauder for only $1 per month by following our Support the Show link at shockedandapplaud.com. We'll be back in 1 week for part two of this dark musical comedy. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.